Welcome back to another episode of the Bodybuilding Down Under podcast. Now, I believe the episode number for today is 102. It's got to be 102 because that cook up with the 101 Dalmatians Canva was absolutely fire, man. So yes, this is 102 in terms of episode number. But today you are joined by Lawrence, DY, Jack, and of course myself, DC. Now, we do have a very jam-packed episode today. But before we do jump into our podcast app, I just wanted to give an update on the t-shirts. So we've taken all the orders at this point in time. We have put in the order for the shirts. We are just waiting for them to be designed by our designers. And then once we receive them, we will be sending them out to everyone who has purchased them. So firstly, just wanted to thank everyone for, you know, investing in our shirts. And we are super excited to get those to you guys and girls. But we had a pretty exciting weekend. We had the IFBB Queensland show. Now, I believe, DY, you were at the show. Is that correct?
Yes, I was.
How was the backstage vibes, man? I actually wasn't there, but I was streaming the show, and looked like there was some absolutely solid talent across a lot of the categories. I honestly think that in Queensland, we have some of the strongest competitors, even within the IFBB scene.
Yeah, I think Queensland's probably the show for the IFBB. It normally has the most competitors. And not only that, the quality of the competitors is really, really good as well. I tried getting there as early as possible so I could pretty much see the entire run. So all the way through from men's physique all the way to pretty much at the end as well. The bikini was a hell of a show. There was a lot of talent pretty much through all the divisions. I'll tell you, one that was a standout was the figure winner. Absolutely peeled. Actually trains out a powerhouse. I believe her name's Lisa. You might have seen her, Lawrence. Absolutely shredded to the bone. Crazy physique. Crazy physique. But there were so many good physiques across the board there as well. Did you tune in for it on the live stream much?
Yeah, so I watched the whole live stream, but I guess it never gives you the same, you know, you can't truly tell people's conditioning until you're actually at a show, right? I feel like that's how you see things on the live stream is quite different from obviously being in the flesh and seeing the competitors under those stage lights. But I thought I'd give a quick shout out to all of the competitors that did take the overalls in each of the categories. So in men's physique, it was Rahul Mishra, which honestly, I think it would have been pretty close between Rahul and Jackson Pios. I did truthfully have a slight favoritism towards Jackson's physique up there. I think he had his shoulder ratio was absolutely wild. What were your thoughts there, DY?
I personally had Jackson, but at the exact same time, I'm also not at the panel. Like, you know, it might look a little bit different when you're sitting down there, like 2 meters from the athletes, and the stage light is hitting different from me, where I'm like, you know, 45 degrees off on an angle. I feel everything about Jackson pretty much kind of hit the criteria. Like, he had an impeccable tan. Like, his tan was the best on stage probably out of the entire day. Not only that, he was conditioned, he had the muscularity. There's a few things that I would probably change a little bit. Like, you know, in the end, he's probably got a million people that are telling him. I think his front shot with the double hands on the hip hides his lats a lot, where I think maybe he might be able to get his lats out a little bit more, give him a little bit more of a width there, or maybe like have the one hand off on the hip. I'm sure he's probably played around with it. He's probably got a reason for running the double hands on the hip pose. I think a lot of people see Ryan Terry pull it off. And unless you got Ryan Terry genetics with a 24-inch waist and a perfectly symmetrical six-pack and lats coming out from the side, it's a very hard one to pull off. It's like 1 out of 100 to be able to pull off that pose better than the one hand on the hip. But man, Jackson's physique was extremely complete. Like, you know, he had pretty much every single muscle group that you would need developed on a men's physique athlete. So I was actually quite impressed. I think it would have been very close, but yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. I think, you know, in terms of like waist taper, maybe Rahul had a little bit more of a narrow waist position, but I guess the trade-off there is that Jackson did have a wider, you know, shoulder width. So looking at shoulder width to weight ratio, you know, waist ratio, it's still quite impressive with Jackson perhaps having a larger waist than Rahul, but Rahul is a smaller athlete in token. So yeah, it's hard to tell. Obviously, like the judges put Rahul there as a first place. And I actually think they hit the criteria quite well across the judging, obviously having Bev Francis on the panel as well. But men's classic, I honestly think Dashi took that out quite nicely. I don't know if that would have been like not super close between one and two. I mean, second place was very impressive, very, very impressive. But I think Dashi definitely had that one. What do you guys think?
I think he's a pretty big front runner for the Pro Card. And I think he's been a very big front runner for a while now. Like, you know, he's pretty much missed that Pro Card by a hair two times over already. So I think seeing his name on the roster, pulling in there to, you know, go for the Classic Division, I think it was a very hard one to beat in that situation. Dom as well, who was with him in the overall, did look really good. But when you're sitting next to someone that has that amount of size and has done the do so many times at that level, it really was a hard one to probably try and compare. I think it would have been somewhat closer than probably what a lot of people would expect. Dom's physique's really good, developed. He has really good shape. But at the exact same time, you're dancing with someone that's probably on the brink of a Pro Card and has been on the brink of a Pro Card for about 3 years now, 4 years now.
Absolutely, yeah. And I feel like when you are so close, like that's why, you know, Dashi is going for it so often, almost year after year, because if you're only just, you know, missing out, then your chances of getting it is pretty damn close. So then moving into the men's bodybuilding, I believe was Joshua Andrew, mate. He has a huge physique, big boy, but also quite a tapered waist, right? Like could hit that vacuum in that front double bicep shot.
Yeah, dude. When I used to work at Power Sups, we'll get to that later in terms of details regarding Power Sups, but Josh used to come in. He was a rep for one of the supplement companies that used to supply us with stuff. And he is just an offensively large human being. And for as much as his whole physique is quite complete and very impressive, his calves are a joke. Like, I mean, I would like to know if he has ever or does even train them, because if my calves were even like half that size, I wouldn't bother. I would just.
I thought you were going the other way with this. You're about to have a dig at him. He's like, dude doesn't train calves.
Oh, no, I don't know. But I would just be interested, because it's almost like if they're that much of a genetic strength, you know, I could imagine him saying, you know, yeah, I maybe do a set a week and I just sort of maintain with where they're at because they are monstrous. And I was going to say, DC, you mentioned that like Bev Francis was obviously judging at the show, which was mega. Like, it's awesome to have someone like that. She did take an L on the day, though. I happened to see an image with her and DY. Very pleased to report that, you know, the Bodybuilding Down Under representative did win the shot. He was in the hoodie, so definitely filled out the space. But the key thing there is that DY doesn't make the mistake of not carving up for show day, regardless of whether or not he's competing. He, like me, will peak himself every time he goes to a bodybuilding show. The whole nine yards, carbohydrates, sodium, water, tan. You know, he just doesn't miss on show day.
I mean, even pulling the fiber down the one day out mark, you know what I mean? Taking that show day poo, I think as well, is obviously immensely important to really get that waist taper in, even though you're wearing the, you know, the shirt. And just that signature, like, you know, that arm pose, like clenched fist pose, when you're standing side onto someone, like that arm has to be jacked, you know what I mean? Or else you're just going to be out angled. Is that right, DY?
Yeah, 100%. And anyone in the audience would have seen me tucking down on a good old Pop-Tart, you know, just before as well, about probably 30 minutes prior, alongside some liquid carbohydrates there as well. So she was pretty much toast. Yeah, I had to bring out the Bev Francis jumper, though. I knew she was on the panel. Like, there's only one way to persuade that panel in my favor, which was obviously rocking her jumper. And she spotted it as soon as I was walking down a backstage. I didn't even see her. And she just yells out and she goes, "That's my jumper." So I was like, all right, she's cooking. She knows. So when we jumped through, we obviously had to get a pick. It was mandatory. Didn't bring a texter, because otherwise it would have been signed by probably the best Australian bodybuilder nearly out there, especially female, that is.
For sure. Well, speaking of more so female athletes that crushed it on the weekend, women's physique was Tracy Guile, I believe. As you mentioned, women's figure was Lisa Buma. Women's wellness, Emily King. She has an incredible physique for sure in terms of the wellness div. I believe she's a prior FMG pro. Is that correct?
Not 100% sure. I can't confirm if she's an FMG pro. I think she's been going for the wellness title for a while now. I think she's done one other season where she's done wellness. But yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think she's definitely a front runner for taking the wellness card, not this weekend, the following weekend. But And then the women's bikini, Katie Stones took out the overalls. I mean, the women's bikini category in the IFBB is just so damn competitive, right? You have so many divisions, and just the talent is incredible. And I think out of all of the categories on stage, I almost think that there was probably the most consistency across the athletes that was similar to the, you know, that matched the criteria quite well within the bikini div. What do you think, DY?
Yeah, being there, the bikini criteria was pretty much met across the board. Like, you know, everyone that was pretty much in the opens division or was winning the division had the condition, had the shape, had the proportions. And that's what I love about the IPB is, like, when you look at the bikini criteria, you pretty much can almost pick out who they're more or less choosing straight up there. But there were some very, very hard lineups. Like, I couldn't imagine judging the open class A. Like, you know, there was like three or four like top quality, like, you know, a couple of overall winners previously in that division and even some of the taller divisions as well. So it was extremely stacked, but, you know, Katie looked good. She's been a front runner for a while now. I believe that is her second overall title as well, which she did get edged out. And I think the Sydney show by Mel, maybe, I believe it was Mel Fletcher. But, you know, that would have been, you know, probably picking hairs between the two. She's probably made some alterations. So I think Katie's a very big fan favorite to, you know, going into this season to, you know, be one of the front runners for the pro card. You know, you've already won two overall titles. I can imagine that she's probably doing quite well and got a little bit of confidence going behind her, but very well deserved as well. Very balanced physique, perfect condition, not too lean, not too soft, and just a very pleasing physique to look at. So I think she's done well.
Absolutely, yeah. And so nationals, obviously not this weekend, but the following weekend. And if anyone listening to this podcast, next week, or I guess this week, they will be listening to it the Wednesday prior to the actual show. But DY, are you going to be there? You're going to the national show?
Yeah. So I've got Rika and Jahara. So I've got the Sunshine Coast show the day before, and then I'll be flying out at pretty much like 5 a.m. the next day in Brisbane. So it's going to be quite a trek, but there's no way I'm going to miss it. I've obviously got like Jahara and Rika. Shout out to Rika as well. Obviously taking out the junior title in Queensland. Very, very well deserved. If anyone knows Rika, you know how hard she works, and she literally had to bend over backwards to try and fit that bikini criteria. And I honestly don't think that we could have pulled it off any better. She brought the condition, wasn't too lean, which is one thing I know that she loves to bring is that conditioning. Also, she had to hide a little bit of her size, but I think fit it perfectly. So in short, I'm going to definitely be going down for the nationals. There's no way I'm going to miss it. Like, you know, I'm going to have both these girls coming in from states. They're going to be in different height classes. The only class that will be pretty much in together will be the juniors. And like I said, I'm not going to miss it. It's going to be a very, very good show.
For sure. Yeah, well, mate, we actually might be on the same flight. So I'm doing the exact same thing with you. And I've actually been chatting with Joey, and Nicole is coming as well. So there's a few of us coming down from Queensland for it, but we might all be on the plane. When are you actually flying back?
I'll be flying back that night as well. So same. I'm literally, there we go. We're going to be all cooking. So
yeah. How good. No, that sounds good.
Yeah. That's actually perfect, DC. Cause then you can just make sure that the pilot keeps the plane at 25,000 feet. If it goes above that, you know, DY will spill. And I think he's, how many weeks out are you now, DY?
Well, they've actually asked me to do the guest posing at the IFBB there. Like, they had Aaron and Brisbane. Yeah. They were like, he kind of missed the mark. He just wasn't full enough. So I've actually I'm going to be taken over down there. And
it's I'll be going
I'll be going in before the bodybuilding open too, before they call that pro card.
Well, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, that's kind of like the primary reason why Joey and I are coming down, just to watch that.
Exactly. Well, I need two guys to hand me up.
I mean, if I could be there, it would be my eyes, because I've obviously taken over the prep now. So just photos every 15 minutes, nothing crazy, DC.
No worries. Do you mind if I get some actually on the plane, like, you know, midway down the aisle? I feel like it'll be good to just get a good look over him at that altitude.
Yeah, it would be perfect.
15 minutes isn't good enough, I think. I think we run a live stream the entire way. Lawrence is going to be on the opposite side of the computer, and like, I'll just stand there in my front relaxed, and we can see where the carbohydrates flow. And if they go into the right areas, like, we've got DC on hand to actually massage them into the right areas with like some soft tissue manipulation.
The air hostess is like,
I hope you don't mind me using the hot stuff.
Get away from him.
Yeah, perfectly fine.
Best lighting as well is right outside the pilot's cabin.
Yeah.
Nice down lighting.
But I also want the natural light, so I'm thinking we might open the door and then I'll just get DC on the brink.
They're right next to each other, so you'll be fine.
Yeah, you got to make sure you get that front-on natural lighting. You know what I mean? It's good. That's the most honest lighting at the end of the day.
We'll tell the pilot, hey, just turn it about 10 degrees north here just so we can get that front. Yep, perfect. Hold it there. So we're actually going past. We're going to Newcastle. Yeah, no, it'll be right.
And DY, I reckon, like, we want to make a statement because obviously you'll be filmed whilst you do this. So sort of set up in that optimal lighting just outside the pilot's door and then make sure you yell on the plane, everyone's going down, which obviously just means you're going to, you know, nail the show and destroy your competition. I can't imagine anyone on a plane misconstruing that message for anything other than that.
Oh, 100%. I thought you were talking about in reference to my DAX as I'll be getting ready to hit the rear glute spread on the plane.
Only the first class. The others don't pay enough for that.
Exactly right. In short, though, like Aaron, I don't know if you guys saw it on the live stream when he did the guest posing. That man is so fucking dense. It's ridiculous. There is so 100%. Much muscle on that framer. And it's just crazy because, like, when you actually see someone that's been qualified for the Olympia and has won a pro show, it's a completely different situation. It's like this guy's sitting in front of you and it's just per square inch. Like, if you were to draw a box around his head to his, like, you know, he's pretty much arms in his front relaxed, like 90% of it is full. It's like, it's ridiculous. He's so dense. And the only person I would ever see somewhat similar to that would be Lawrence at his world's debut. I reckon he would be the only person, but you could draw the box around and probably would fill it out a little bit more.
Completely agree. Yeah, there was some dude at Worlds named Brian who was like big-ish, but I completely agree. I think I'm right up there with Aaron Pilates.
And for Aaron being such a dense human, can really like hold his waist in nicely as well, right? Like in his guest posing, that's one thing that really stood out. He didn't have any sort of, you know, not bloating per se, but just didn't have, you know, has that narrow waist position. I think it's pretty exciting for IFBB bodybuilding as a whole. Like, you've also got Sam Pierce, who is competing, I believe, this season too. So, like, I think he'll be an immense showing. I think he's going into the New York Pro or something like that as well.
Sam's doing the California, and I believe that Aaron is doing the New York. So I think there's about a week between them.
Yeah, cool. So Australia represent, it's pretty awesome. But moving on to a couple of cool Q&A questions that we do have, and we'll kick that off with the first question here. Should women eat more intuitively around their menstrual cycle? Now, Lawrence, I'm going to throw this over to you, my man. What are your thoughts in this regard?
Yes, well...
Why would you throw it over to him first out of...
Mate, been in a relationship for longest, just really an expert when it comes to the female anatomy and well-being, really.
I mean, that's why he's keeping his contest prep away from Gemma because he's fully aware of the influence of... Oh, sorry, what?
Yeah, no, she doesn't listen, mate. She hasn't listened for a long time, so we're fine. Yeah, we're fine. I will caveat this question by saying that I had a guest on my podcast today, Lauren Colenza-Semple, and she has a big interest in sort of female-specific physiology and how, I suppose, resistance training practices do differ for women. And I actually did ask her today some questions around, you know, a big discussion was around training during the menstrual cycle, but we did speak a little bit about, you know, whether or not nutrition is somewhat of a consideration. And she basically said in short that there's no empirical evidence to suggest that, you know, you specifically should alter nutrition around, you know, whether it be the week of menstruation or something like that. However, I think, you know, there's nuance to that because I'm sure that, like many things, it would come down to a case-by-case basis where, you know, certain women who might have, say, the, you know, really severe menstrual cramps, for example, they might not be able to train hard in the gym, you know, for as many sessions during that week. So if they were, for example, in a maintenance phase or potentially in a dieting phase, maybe even the early stages of a contest prep, you know, if they knew that they were going to have to, you know, do a lot less in terms of expenditure because they're maybe training 2 out of the, you know, 5 days for that week, then keeping their nutrition the exact same is probably not a wise thing to do overall, because it could result in them, you know, not quite meeting the rate of loss that they need to. But at the same time, I think there's also, you know, psychological considerations. I know that for some females, you know, certain symptoms will be magnified during the week of menstruation. They might be feeling depressed. They might be feeling anxious, a combination of different mental health factors. And, you know, for a lot of people, food is somewhat of a coping strategy. And, you know, it feels nice to get that dopamine hit to potentially eat something highly palatable. So if you give people potentially too much leniency to just say, hey, you know, like, it's your period this week, like, don't even stress, just like eat intuitively, as the question put it, you could be setting someone up for, you know, a negative outcome, because they might be going to consume things that aren't going to necessarily suit the phase that they're in as far as, you know, their calorie targets. And then, you know, potentially you add on the fact that, you know, a lot of fluid moving around, their scale weight's probably going a bit out of whack at the best of times. And then the following week, they could be, you know, up an appreciable amount on the scale because they've sort of overconsumed their calories. And then that might put them in a bit of an awkward spot, both from a self-efficacy standpoint, and it also might be contrary to the goal at hand. So I think there is no black and white answer. I think it's going to be very case by case. But I do think in most cases, once again, depending on the goal, it's probably not, you know, the best idea to just say eat intuitively. Because for a lot of people who do what we do, whether you're in a cutting phase or a dieting phase, we're sort of not eating intuitively. You know, we're eating to the goal and whatever that may be at the time.
I think you put that really well, man. 100%. I do know that there is a potentially a slight increase in basal metabolic rate in the later aspects of the, like, the luteal phase. But I believe the increase is not a whole lot. We're talking like 7-8%, something like that. It could be the equivalent of someone consuming, let's say, 2000 calories, and they have a slight increase in expenditure by 160 calories, somewhere within that ballpark. And I guess if you were to try and just strategically match an increase in, you know, energy expenditure with more calories consumed, I feel like it can get pretty hairy pretty quickly in terms of, you know, well, then the decrease in BMR, basal metabolic rate, after, you know, menstruation as an example. So it's just too many conflicting and confounding variables in terms of adjustments or micro tweaks in that regard. But what about you, DY? Do you have any sort of periodization in with regards to nutrition around, you know, menstrual cycles or anything like this?
Well, it depends, because, like, what you said there with, like, you know, maybe like increasing food, like, you know, for example, if the BMR does go up a little bit, but what happens if then their training performance actually goes down because they might need to alter their training in regards to, like, their menstrual cycle or whatever it might be, like, you know, so then you're like swapping one, but then the other one's kind of going down at the exact same time or whatever it is. I feel like it's a bit choppy changey with, like, some of this stuff when it comes to, like, the menstrual cycle. It's very individual specific. Some people perform better on their menstrual cycle. Like, I've had girls that tell me they can push like an extra couple of reps every time their cycle comes around. But then I also have someone else on the other hand where I need to swap out every single one of their glute thrust variations because their menstrual cycle is so painful, and then they can't actually do their sessions at the adequate intensity, or, well, like, you know, at the intensity that they might have done last session. It's also a very hard one, because if you're going to, like, we've seen some stuff recently, or, like, you know, over the past couple of months, where, like, people would talk about, like, you know, whenever the cycle comes around, it's like deload or pull back intensity. But it's like, if you do that for every single time your cycle comes around, you're literally going to piss away 25% of the progress that you probably could make for no real reason. Like, there's no evidence for us to suggest that. And even then, if you do need to pull back some of the training, like, maybe you might find that you can't match the same weight or whatever it might have been from the week prior, you're still sitting in the approximate RIR if you're still training with that same intensity. So we're still making good progress. So, like, you know, even though you might not be able to do those extra two reps on the glute thrust or an extra one rep on the RDLs, just because you can't get that one rep doesn't mean that we should just, like, pull back every bit of our training intensity to try and, like, you know, counter it. It's like, you know, we can still make very good progress. We just need to maybe swap around some exercises. For example, if you have very bad cramps and you can't do barbell glute thrust, we're not going to put barbell glute thrust in there if it's going to cause you so much pain and discomfort. So there is an element of it, but like I said, some girls can perform even better on their cycle. So, you know, it's very individual specific, like, you know, chatting to the client, seeing what they experience. If they can train even better, when they're on their cycle, let them have at it. If, you know, if they do need to pull back a little bit in regards to training load, maybe you could make some alterations in terms of the rep schemes, or maybe like swapping around some exercise. That way they can still push hard in the gym, sit in that approximate RIR, and, you know, still make some significant progress instead of just, all right, deload every time your cycle comes around. You know, like I said, you miss 25% of your training sessions for the entire year, you're probably going to run into a little bit of grief when it comes, like, you know, especially in a prep. Imagine missing 25% of our training sessions throughout a preparation phase. It's probably going to have some repercussions on our physique. Now, in regards to like the swapping of food, that really depends on the person as well. It's like, in the end, if you're in a preparation phase, you might be able to make some small alterations where maybe you might be able to pull food down for the other 3 weeks to then counter for that 1 week in their menstrual cycle where they might find that their hunger is a little bit more elevated. But, you know, it's really individual specifics. Most people in a contest prep, like, I don't think I've ever experienced a female saying that they're so hungry that they can't stick to their macros. Like, you know, when their focus is on in a contest prep, you know, maybe outside of a contest prep where there is a little bit more leniency, where you can implement maybe some of these diet breaks as the diet goes on. But, you know, when you're in a contest prep, if you don't have the time, you don't have the time. Like, you know, the hunger's there, but sometimes you're just going to have to push on through it. You know, if it allows and we're sitting very well ahead of schedule and we're able to implement some of these diet breaks, then, you know, we might look at doing so, but.
Absolutely. Did you have anything extra you wanted to add there, Jack?
Not really. No, I think, yeah, bottom line is it assess it on a case by case basis and yeah, discuss it with the individual at hand and don't,
100%.
Yeah. Don't prescribe something like black and white unless you've, discussed it with the client and the nuances around it.
I feel like the concept of like intuition is often applied very much when it comes to training and nutrition without the concept where like you need to have good intuition to essentially employ intuitive eating, right? Or intuitive based training, because ultimately someone could employ intuitive eating, but their intuition tells them to eat absolute junk, you know, garbage during their menstrual cycle, as opposed to employing, you know, most foods as being whole foods that are micronutrient dense. So I feel like intuitive eating is definitely something that we aim to have as being like having sound knowledge when it comes to intuition and intuitive eating as a whole. But I feel like that's something that you refine through years of experience tracking and training and, you know, these sorts of things. So I feel like you guys have, yeah, summarized that very nicely.
I think if you'd have a blanket statement for every, like, blanket rule for pretty much every single female, I think you'd probably get it very, very wrong, because there's people that are going to fall outside of the spectrum on either way. It's one that's very, very personalized to the individual.
Something that's actually changed recently, I feel like, in terms of literature, like, I remember back at university, we would learn about the menstrual cycle and changes in perceived or changes in strength levels amongst the majority of women during their phases. And I believed during my university studies, we learned that, you know, strength increased as one approached menstruation. But it's something that has been kind of disproved recently, where it's actually just not the case. And it's actually individual basis as to someone's response to the menstrual cycle and whether they see increases in strength or decreases in strength, whether that's associated with actual decreases in strength or perhaps changes to things like gastrointestinal comfort, which impacts someone's ability and willingness to train hard, you know, as an example there as well. So I feel like there's a few different, like you guys put it, it's not so much a black and white answer here. I think it's a little bit more, you know, in the gray. Well, moving on to our next question here, managing dizziness during a contest prep, personal experiences. What about you, Jack? Have you had any sort of experiences or even, you know, with some of your athletes, like reporting dizziness when specifically dieting or perhaps associated with training or things like this?
Yeah, I've had some experience myself, like mainly in a contest prep when, I mean, the number one or two exercises that come to mind is one, back extensions, and two, like cable ab crunches, where you're kind of moving your head up and down a lot, or you might spend a lot of time with your head lowered and sort of the change in blood flow might influence things. But I think, and a fair few clients, again, mainly in contest prep. And I think my summation of it would be just around potentially lower blood pressure. I think there's a couple of different reasons of why it might occur, but probably in contest prep, like, we know that blood pressure is potentially coming down for some individuals. And I think two ways just to stay on top of that is, one, just ensure that you're really well hydrated all the time. which most people do quite well in comp prep because people like to use increased fluid as a appetite management, but also helps to salt your food. So like if someone who doesn't salt your food too much in the improvement season, then probably a good idea to do it a little bit more in comp prep. And like that, especially pre-workout, if you're getting dizzy or lightheaded during the workout, then make sure you have some salt pre-workout, whether it's in your pre-workout meal or even just have some like strategically as a pre-workout supplement.
I think especially if you're, like you mentioned, you are drinking a ton of liquids, right? Because it's that salt concentration and movement of salt, which creates that osmotic pressure and allows us to be able to pass, you know, more water, especially if we're drinking a whole lot. So, you know, I think balancing out that potentially with more sodium, I think is a good point of call there.
It's one thing that you see a lot in competition prep, to be honest, is when people go from like the off season and they've got a little bit more flexibility in their diet, their foods might have more sodium. And then once the prep rolls around, everyone's like, fuck, I've flipped the switch. Everything's clean. Like, you know, all my foods are perfect. And sometimes they forget the difference in like the sodium amounts from like a day-to-day basis. And they might go from consuming 4,000 milligrams of sodium and sometimes it falls between 500 to 1,000 just by default of cleaning up their diet. So, you know, it's one thing that a lot of competition prep athletes probably need to actually look at is like, how much sodium are you actually getting? Are you getting enough? And, you know, if you're drinking a lot of water and you're training a lot, you got to remember that your requirements are also going to be by far more than what the standard person's going to require. Like you're going to be sweating it out at a very fast rate, especially on like those leg days. Then you might have to do cardio. That sodium's going to be flying. It's just going to be getting chewed up. So just making sure that like, you know, your electrolyte balance is actually good, because you see it a lot of time, like headaches start going on, muscle cramps, and, you know, you go, all right, what's the sodium at? And they go, 1,000, and I don't even salt my food. And if I do, it's pre-cooked. It's like, all right, well, now we know this needs to get addressed. And that's another thing is like, you know, if you're salting your all your food before you cook it, you know, a little bit of that's going to get cooked out as well. So you're probably not going to have as much sodium as what you're expecting.
Absolutely. Do you guys feel as though some athletes can overdo it in the salt department? Because I definitely think that that can be the case where you might get a picture of a meal from an athlete and it's like, man, you are making it rain on that thing. Like, do you want some chicken with that salt or what's going on? When you take a bite down, like I can hear the crunch like into the salt crystals as you eat that. Have you guys had any experience with that sort of stuff? Because I mean, even I look back on my contest prep and man, I got pretty heavy handed with the salt, that's for sure. And I feel like I had to take a moment to sort of step back a little bit and be like, all right, how much am I actually consuming at the moment? Let's kind of maybe dial this back a little bit as I'm approaching, you know, stage time, because for me to acutely raise my sodium intake above and beyond what would be considered my baseline, like I'm going to have to go crazy on show day. And that's probably not going to be very comfortable from a gastrointestinal standpoint.
Well, Jack, do you remember in Townsville when I like nicked something on my arm and it just like straight up bled for about 20 minutes, but like properly bled?
I was getting like, concerned.
Yeah. And I was like, damn, I wonder if this is like partly a blood pressure and high sodium thing, where it's literally just like, I mean, it wasn't like a huge gash. Like I literally think it was like a pimple and I just like scraped it on something, but it just would not stop bleeding. Couldn't believe it.
Bro's just hitting a front double bicep and this is a stream of just like...
Yeah. Yeah. 20 grams of salt that day, no water. So yeah, perfect. But I know that one of the bodybuilders that I follow, Cuba, I know that I think it's quite a good idea. I probably would do it in my next prep. Like, I suppose once you get to that pointy end where you know, keep an eye on sodium a bit more, he'll weigh out like all of his ground salt for the day and have it in like a little cup. And he knows that's all the salt for the day. And, you know, that'll hit his sodium requirements. And then he'll just kind of sprinkle it on meals as he needs to. Because, man, the house where I'm at the moment, he's got the worst salt shaker I've ever seen in my entire life. It's proper unusable. I heard Gemma like yell out from the kitchen last night because it like she was trying to use it and then all the salt like went on her meal. My meal was sorted, so she just had to take the L there, which is unfortunate. But mate, the lack of salt in the cream of her ice, it's bordering on a travesty. Like the amount that salt improves cream of ice just cannot be stated.
How many clicks of the salt shaker are we doing?
I reckon, see, For me, it's like I'm not too heavy-handed like at baseline, and then it goes up a little bit in prep. But in prep, I'll normally actually just like weigh out like hot sauce and use that as my sodium. But then in the off season, once food starts to get a bit high and I'm like, oh, this is like taking a bit to get through, I find that my salt intake goes up again because I'm just wanting the meal to be a bit more palatable until eventually I'm like, oh, screw this. I'm just going to start adding like some sauces and stuff to make it a bit easier. Because I always used to find it funny. It's like I'm there putting on like the low sodium barbecue sauce and then just like cranking the salt. And I was like, oh, okay, this is defeating the purpose a little bit. But look, if I'm honest, 7 or 8.
7 or 8. All right.
On cream of rice.
No.
All right.
Oh, sorry. That's on like a standard chicken and rice meal or chicken, rice, and oatmeal. Hear me out. But I reckon, I think I normally go 4 or 5 cranks on the cream of rice.
Did you run out of rice? Is that why you had to incorporate some oats?
So the thing is, I've been being like a little bit more just like, you know, keeping an eye on my fiber. And I noticed like a definite difference in, you know, morning habits that would involve fiber when I have them below a certain amount. So I was like, okay, well, if I go just rice with this meal, I'll hit my carbs, but I'm not going to have enough fiber for the day. So I thought, well, oats don't really taste like much anyway, so I'll just mix them in. And it wasn't bad at all. It was fine.
So we're talking grabbing the scooper and mixing that stuff together, not having it separately. Like you had to throw it all into the same bowl? Or
well, the only thing worse than having oats in with my chicken, rice, and veg, I think, would just be having the oats dry by itself.
Right there, Jack Ratchet.
Yeah. I've just been hanging around Jack too much. It's just
he's lost the plot. We wrap it up here.
Yeah. But no, I thought it worked quite well. And I mean, I've been doing very controversial things on the meal front. I had a question for the boys. Is egg chicken?
Depends on what egg you're having. Is it a chicken egg?
Well, yeah. I mean, if it's a
chicken... Are you eating ostrich eggs? Like, what are we cooking up here?
So if you have an egg that's from a chicken, is that egg itself, is that chicken?
No.
Well, I mean, on the NATAB website or the Oz database, food database, it actually does say chicken, egg. So I guess it is.
Because the DNA of that egg is the same DNA that a chicken has, right?
Mm.
So yeah, one's flesh and one isn't.
But if you like, but I mean, it's still like if you had that chicken egg and you said like, all right, like let's analyze this DNA, like what species of animal is this? You would say it's chicken, would you not?
Well, it's not an animal.
Well, it's not been born, but it would still be it's an animal embryo.
Well, it's like if you're eating fish eggs, whatever they're called, roe, is it? Or something like that. Like, yeah. Are you eating fish then?
Well, I think...
See, Lawrence only eats caviar, so it's a little bit different from... Like, I think it's that, like, 5-star cav. So I don't know what you're on about with this roe. Like, you know, get that out.
No, it's a level above caviar. You wouldn't understand.
Yeah.
Well, there we go.
I feel like it would be chicken because it's just a baby chicken, is it not?
I mean, I'd like to think that I'm not eating a baby chicken each time I have an egg, so I'll go with no.
Mm.
Do you think about it when it's scrambled, though, Jack?
No, I don't eat scrambled eggs, so.
Really?
Yeah, not often. I mean, you can cook them for me if you want.
Damn, morning after, hear me out. Put eggs on toast for Jackie boy.
Don't forget the avo.
No. Before we proceed, gentlemen, I couldn't help but notice, DY, you got what seemed to be a fairly robust order of supplements from PowerSups the other day. So just give us a rundown, mate. Give us a haul review.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So what was it? I got the Primabolics, is it? The protein. Yeah, I've heard a lot of good things about that. So yeah, I really do like it. The salted caramel is like elite. I really like it in like a water-based protein, which is, I don't normally like many proteins in a water base. I actually really did enjoy it. I did also get the choc fudge. I haven't tried that in a shake. I had it in cream of rice. Not bad. I do think the rule one blend probably takes it, in my opinion, in regards to just the consistency and the texture in the cream of rice.
You got to try the Core Nutritionals, mate. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
It's the goat.
It's Doug Miller's brand, correct?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Not tried it. Looks good.
Very good.
Then what else I get? I got the BBD, the Big Bad Devastate pre-workout. I've always had that one.
The what? Yeah. Sorry, can we go back to that?
Yeah.
That's a decent pre. A little bit too strong for me, to be honest, but pretty good.
Yeah, anyways, I double scoop it and then off I roll to the gym with 300.
That's pre-bed.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's before my second workout. I normally have, three scoops for my AM workout. Just a little bit different. Anyway, sleep like a log.
3 days later.
I haven't slept in weeks, but anyways, we'll get to that later. No, I always love the BBD pre-workout. It's strong, but yeah. No, that's it. I'm wrapping it up here. But let me say how much I love the BBD pre-workout again.
Yeah, far out. Got him in 4K. Well, yeah, that it did look like a very nice care package from the team. So, ladies and gents, if you do want to make the most of the savings at PowerSups, make sure that you use the code BDU at the checkout. That will get you 15% off your order. So make sure you do that at www.powersups.com.au. Back to UDC.
Finishing off with the last Q&A question. I think this is a great question here. I think we'll provide a lot of great detail here, but should you be aiming for true 100% at show one? One thing I wanted to reference here is that I guess looking at the upcoming season in like season B, and I guess just the sheer number of federations that we have now in Australia, you know, with more federations coming into fruition, it does mean that, you know, more of these federations are trying to coordinate their shows accordingly. And it can mean that if athletes are wanting to compete across, you know, multiple feds, it does perhaps mean that there's going to be quite a lengthy season ahead. So the whole concept of aiming for 100% at show one, you know, do you guys think that's doable? Is that something that you guys apply for, you know, your athletes? I think it's always dependent on how long the season's going to be ultimately. But I'm going to throw it over to you first, Lawrence, and just say, like, looking back upon your season, like the first show that you did, and obviously there's refinements that you make with your conditioning across your shows. Like, do you think how you presented it, for example, WNBF, you know, Worlds, like if had you had that look for show number one, what do you think, you know, with regards to like having to maintain that sort of, I guess, depleted state throughout the entirety of the contest prep?
Yeah, I think it is a really good question. And I think that, you know, Joey and I have discussed this before where, you know, not being at 100% doesn't mean you come in not ready. And, you know, we came into the Townsville show knowing that that wouldn't be the best look of the season, somewhat intentionally, because we had 9 weeks to kind of hold on to conditioning, but it was still very, very good. So there's a difference between going, okay, this is the warm-up show and you kind of look like you're 6 weeks out. And I think if you plan your season accordingly, that doesn't have to be the case. But I do think that, you know, looking back on my season, if I could have it planned exactly my way, would I probably have wanted it to be a bit shorter between show one and show five? Like, absolutely. I think the distance of 9 weeks, which it ended up being, was right on the cusp slash a little bit longer than I would have liked, because for as much as I was very pleased with how I looked, you know, all the way to the end of the season, and I think, you know, the package that I brought to Worlds was very, very good conditioning, filled out the physique, you know, pretty well, and I think I looked like I belonged up there. I will say I think that my physique wasn't quite responding in the exact same way towards the back end of the year. You know, you're just, pumps aren't quite as good, you know, like you're doing the carb up process and you don't feel that same sort of, you know, pop to the physique and almost feel like you're filling out in the same way. Whereas looking back on the 2023 season, I think my best look was certainly in Melbourne for the ICN Nationals. And I think that was the best combination of fullness and conditioning and pop to the physique. And, you know, that was smack bang in the middle. So I think there is something to be said for that, where, you know, as the season goes on, there is a point where if you've done it right, you know, maybe show one on two are like 96%, 97%, maybe then there's 2 weeks and you get to 100%. But at some point it will start to tail off, and you're hopefully going to have as little of a tail off as possible. But if you just expect yourself to hold on to conditioning for 3 months, it's just not going to happen. At some point, the body will just stop responding.
Yeah, I completely agree. I completely agree there. And I think by virtue of aiming for 100% or close to 100% for that show one, there's always a little bit more to come off. Like, I feel like there's always a little bit more to get a little bit leaner. There's a little bit more refinement in terms of things like your, you know, posing, aside from posing in terms of like, obviously talking about conditioning here. But I feel like if you deliberately aim to really undercut that first show, it then becomes a lot harder to kind of catch up in between the shows, especially if you've got back-to-back peaks. So, and it's always going to depend on how many weeks you've got between shows. Like if you've got, you know, 6 weekends in a row of shows, you probably want to be closer to 100% for that first show, because there's probably not going to be a whole lot of time to refine between those shows, having a few days of depletion and then basically running your next peak. So whereas if you've got, you know, 6 weeks in between shows, but there's a 3 week gap in the middle or something like that, because you might be doing like 3 shows or something like that within that time frame, then maybe that's when you can aim for a little bit less than, you know, 100% of that first show kind of thing and taper that in. So I think the approach is going to be very different, but just paying respect to the fact that when you are, you know, at that top end of conditioning, it's pretty hard to maintain that for a very long time without having some degree of detriment, like you mentioned, just not getting the same pump, just being more tired in your training, like just feeling overall just more diet fatigue as a whole. What do you boys think? What do you think, DY?
I think also just sitting that lean, you're just at such a position to lose tissue very, very easily. Like, you know, like you're sitting there at like what, sub 5% as a natural bodybuilder, and there's no help. You literally have to pretty much fight against your physiology to, you know, try and not to put on body fat because you're absolutely screaming for it. So it's one of those ones. And then you do see those physiques that do get in really, really good shape 6 weeks prior, and they just lose that pop. They don't have that fullness anymore. And you might notice they look the exact same at like 1 kilo less than what they did at their first show, because they're somewhat losing that muscle with that fat as well. So the look almost looks the exact same. It's just this very drawn out process of like, you know, you have nothing left nearly to go, and you're just sitting there and just holding it. And it's like your body doesn't want to sit there. So the chance of muscle loss is going to be a lot higher. Not only that, training performance starts to go down. Like imagine having to hold 6 weeks of your training performance logs and like, you know, still trying to have really good sessions. Like there's going to be some drop off when you're that lean and on that low food. Even if you're reversing out, like Lawrence can probably tell you, like, you know, even with a lot of higher food, it doesn't save you. You're still sitting there. The sessions are still shit. Doesn't matter what you tell yourself. They get to a point where there ain't no saving someone at 5% body fat for 6 to 8 weeks.
Sometimes it just like takes that, like that slight edge off, but it certainly doesn't omit the entirety of the diet condition. Like even bringing food back up, like the fact that you're so depleted is really because you're just walking around with essential levels of body fat, like if that. So, you know, 100%.
Yeah. So what I would add is it's probably even better for some people to not try and aim for 100%, because as per what DY said, the risk of tissue loss is much higher, and maybe not obviously experienced bodybuilders and for people who are confident in bringing 100%, but maybe a younger bodybuilder, someone who doesn't have quite as much muscle, or someone who's competing for the first time. I feel like a lot of people might, and maybe less experienced coaches might, especially a younger competitor, dig them so hard that like they're not going to look like they're not going to have cross-striated glutes necessarily as a younger bodybuilder. The genetic people who have the genetics or who have the muscularity there can do that, but I think often people will look worse trying to strive for 100%. Not every case, but some cases.
Absolutely. Well said, boys. Well, I think that basically wraps up another episode of the Bodybuilding Down Under podcast. If you love today's episode, remember to give us a 5-star review, and we will certainly see you in the next episode.